Hey, it's Tom Whalen. You are listening to the Master of One podcast. You can find me at strongstuff.net.
Welcome to this Sandbox episode of the Master of One podcast, part two for this week. This week, we kick off 2017 with our friend, artist, author, and illustrator, Andrew Cole. Listen as we talk about the more practical tasks of being a professional creative. It may not be flashy, but it sure is helpful. I'm Andrew, your master of art and design.
I'm Patrick, your master of television and film.
And I'm Luke, your master of toys and games.
So get your pens, pencils, notepads, tablets, and other note-taking devices ready, because it's time to do some learning.
How many hands do you have?
So we want to do something a little bit different with our Sandbox interview this episode. We want to talk about the uncreative side of the creative industry. We're talking about the business aspects, and these are the things that really matter if you're trying to actually make a living doing this thing that we call art and doing this thing we call the creative field. So we are talking with our good friend, Andrew Kolb. He is on the show all the time, but he has so much knowledge, we can't get enough of him. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Andrew Kolb to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
It feels like you were just here, but it's maybe because you always live in my heart. So Patrick, why don't you take us away on this and steer the ship a little bit with this?
So typically, and thankfully, we talk to what I like to refer to as producers. Ever since I heard Frank Kozik use that term on the show, people that just make stuff, that's their drive. And so typically we talk about the stuff that they make and kind of what their creative process is for producing it. Now, there's another side to this, which is that you can't just sit at home and make stuff all the time. You have to actually sell it, or you have to be able to support yourself and support the stuff you make, because if you don't have a way of supporting yourself, then ultimately, it's going to die in some way. So, and I think this has been highlighted more through the Slack community. So Kolb, you're part of the Slack community. Obviously all of us are big parts of it, and we have people asking questions all the time, either because they're not sure how to format their resume, or they're not sure kind of what the balance is between work and freelance, or they're not sure how to pursue their own, promoting their own creative stuff they offer. And in that, those kind of questions come up all the time. And again, it's not something we've ever really, super directly addressed on the show, even though it is super important, because having the drive and passion is one piece of it. Having the space is another piece of it, and doing things that allow you the space is another piece of it. So what we want to dive into today, talking to Andrew, who we've had on the show several times, we want to dive into more of the business side, the uncreative side of what you do that allows and supports the creative production side of what you do. So that is the overly long introduction that we're going to jump into. So Kolb, first, why don't we just get some surface thoughts on that topic, and then we'll actually dive into some specific questions.
Okay, sure. Yeah. What would I say to that? I think the biggest thing for the, like, what we're calling the non-creative side I think it was like the two sides of the coin. Like, I think on one side you have the kind of creative world where you're like, ooh, I want to make this project and I want to start producing this and I want to share this idea with the world. And I think that's important, and making sure that you're aware of kind of what needs you have from the creative side. The other side of that coin is considering your, I guess maybe not necessarily your audience, but everyone, basically everyone else in the world. So
sure.
Who is looking at your website? Who is buying this? What's their experience? And I think when you're thinking about that, that at the same time of fulfilling your needs can also then inform kind of what you do. So if you're thinking about packaging, then I put in like just a quick thank you note with my, whenever I make a sale. Actually, I think all of you have purchased something from my shop, so I'm sure you know, and I appreciate that.
50% off. It was great.
So I think that's the other part of it too. Like, I think the boring side of, or the non-creative side of the creative world is just just thinking about your audience or who you're trying to get this work in front of. Like, I think we're going to maybe talk about websites today. Like, I think that's a huge part of it is what work are you going to put on it? But then what is the experience for the person looking at said work? Because I think if you only think of the one and don't consider the other, then I think it's going to kind of fall short of what you needed to do.
Sure.
So I hope that's broad enough.
No, yeah, I think that's broad enough. So specifically as it pertains to you, so in your experience going from being the creative person that like loves to do this and says, hey, I want to do this for a living, how was that transition of this side of the coin for you? Like, how was it, how easy was it for you to wrap your head around the business type stuff?
Well, I don't know. Well, how easy was it? Like, I think I went to school for graphic design, and I think the big part of that education was like meeting the needs of the client, which admittedly, talking to a lot of my friends in the illustration world, going through school as an illustrator, you don't get as much of that. Some obviously you get more than others, but I think going through a design program really makes you consider, okay, what is the brief and are you meeting those needs? And I think that naturally, at least for me, carried over into the business side of things and going, okay, if the brief is this website, what are the needs? Like, what does it need to do? I need to be able to have my name somewhere, I need to have contact information, artwork that's easily visible, like all these kind of things that need to be checked off, that just becomes a quick checklist that I can accomplish. So
sure,
with that in mind, it wasn't that hard of a transition, but figuring out what that checklist was is what's still taking me time to figure out. Like, I still obviously have no idea what exactly each person needs because it's always going to be different.
You mentioned the brief, but I want to jump into a question we've had in the Slack channel, and I'm going to kind of just sum it up.
He's going to make it brief.
What portion of your job is directing a client kind of what they say they want versus maybe what's best? And what percentage of your job is giving them what they want?
So I would say, in the early days of any relationship or like business relationship, it's let's just use a random number that's like 50-50. Like, it's really high on direction and just kind of saying, this is what I do, this is kind of what I need from you, what do you need, and figuring that out. And I think if you really put time into that early on, like, I really am clear with what my stages of progress are with a project, what I need from them for a brief, all of those kind of details. I do that early and I do that often and thoroughly. And I find if I do that at the early stages, then not only does that project go smoother, but I find I run into less challenges with the second and the third and the fourth project. Like, I think if you really kind of mold that relationship as best as you can early on, or catch little problems or little kind of areas of ambiguity in the early stages, then it helps avoid kind of big problems later on. It's like any relationship. It's if you kind of like take care of or resolve the small fights before they become big ones, then everyone's kind of happier. This is less about business tonight, and we're going to talk about relationship advice with Andrew Cole.
Well, honestly, that's the biggest thing, right? So, especially when you start off, you've got to build that trust with clients, and you've got to build that relationship, because ultimately you want to get to a place where just giving them quote unquote what they want and then giving them the right things, which aren't always the same. You want to get to where that ratio is more bent toward you actually directing them and giving them what they need versus what they want or what they don't even know that they need yet. And you can only do that through relationships, right? So what is the I don't know, what's the number one thing that you've learned not to do when building a trust relationship with a client? And then maybe counteract that with what's the number one thing that you do every time to get that started on the right foot?
Okay, so number one thing that I've learned, so this is reverse engineered, because I was thinking as you were asking that question, what's the number one thing I do? And then you went full 180. So number one thing I don't do is
keep
make
it
assumptions.
On your toes, man.
Yeah. Thank you. So I try to never make assumptions. Like, if there's any kind of point of uncertainty, I just assume that I need to kind of get that clarified, because 99 times out of 100, it'll be just off enough that it's kind of it's going to snowball into something that is going to be a bigger headache later on that could have been resolved if I asked the right questions earlier on. And that's actually the thing that I do every time, or my number one kind of thing that I keep in mind is to always ask questions. So like before a project is starting, I want as much information as I can, almost to the point of it being unnecessary. And then if they give me feedback, let's say they say, I mean, like, it's great that your sun is pink, but we need it to be a yellow sun in the sky. Most of the time I will try to respond to say, sure. But can I, like, do you know why you want it to, that to be changed? And they might say, oh, like, it's because there isn't high enough contrast against the background, or because it's competing too much with this. And then I'll say, okay, then this is the sun as it is yellow, but here are two other ways that I would rather resolve the problem that you're kind of describing. And I'm happy with whatever you're suggesting or whatever you prefer. Because I find sometimes client feedback is trying to solve the problem how they understand it, which is great, but they are also coming to you for your expertise, and sometimes you have a different way, or I would like to think I have a different way to solve that same problem. But if I don't know what that problem is that they're seeing, then I can't really solve it. So my number one is ask questions, and the thing I try to avoid is making any assumptions. Like, I really, if there's any kind of doubt, I will send it back an email before just starting on the work, because it will always save me so much more work down the road.
Well, so can I follow up on that real quick, Patrick? Because there's a thing that comes to mind when you said that, and it's the phrase under promise and over deliver. And what I'm hearing from you, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm hearing from you is don't under promise, deliver on exactly what you are promising you're going to do, and get all the clarification on the front end so that they know exactly what they're getting.
Yeah, because I think the big thing is I really try to avoid any surprises at the end. Like, as much as it sounds great for, like, the relationship to be the client gives you a bunch of information, and then at the very end they're wowed by this thing that they couldn't see coming. Right. I think that's a bit romanticized. Like, I find I think I get work consistently from certain clients because there's no question. Like, they know by the time final artwork is delivered, they know what they're getting, and it's not going to fall short. Because I think the same possibility, or the same tree that branches into the wow factor and just kind of endless possibilities, also splits off and says, oh no, like, we saw the sketches, but this is not what we were expecting. We need to, like, start over. Maybe that's me playing it safe, but I still prefer, like, a solid, I know what we're going to get, as opposed to, like, a Russian roulette.
So yep. How do you build trust with someone then? Like, if someone ultimately doesn't know they can have faith in your final product, then how do you get that?
I think it's asking a lot of questions, and I find it's sharing my process with them at every step of the way. Like, I try not to kind of hold any kind of secrecy or mysticism about what I do. Like, I'll send them sketches. When I make changes, they see the changes before I go on to color studies. And then when I start color studies, they're usually pretty detailed that, like, by the end of it, they've seen the sketch, which is, like, the tight compositional work. They've seen the color study, which is more or less what the impression is going to be kind of from a distance. And when you mash those two together, there's still going to be maybe some tweaks by the end. But at that point, it's so close to being what they're kind of imagining in their mind that there's no real surprise. There are still changes that happen, but most of the time, if they've seen my tight sketches and my pretty kind of detailed color studies, they know what they're getting. So that's how I avoid the conflict or the uncertainty.
So from you know, if that's your normal way of working and how you handle it, is that pretty standard for everybody you've encountered, or are there clients that you have run into that just don't work that way? Like, they want to see, I mean, it sounds like you're giving a lot of things in process, so there aren't any surprises. I would think that generally, most clients like that, but have you ever ran into issues where your normal process isn't what people want?
I think it's less about the process and more about, like, if I'm, let's say, efficient with my time. So if they give me feedback on Monday and I get it back to them, or Monday morning and I get back to them Monday afternoon, the only thing I've kind of run into is some clients will see that as, oh, cool, he's like totally sitting and waiting for my feedback to roll in, which is great, but not always true. So I find it's also about pacing. So I think it's less about the process and more about kind of when I deliver that content. So yeah, I'm definitely keeping them in touch all the way through the stages that lead to the final artwork, but I try not to make it too quick, because I find sometimes if I'm too efficient, that will then lead to them expecting it always to be a 2-hour turnaround. Hopefully none of my clients are listening to this.
Oh, just, man, put on the brakes. No, listen, a little bit.
We have all been there. There, or at least I know that I've been there for sure. Like where I've, with, for whatever reason, a client jumps in and I have just the right amount of time, or I have just the amount of free time, and it fills a gap and whatever, and I'm able to knock something out really quickly for them. And then that becomes the expectation. That can lead to a distrust that comes later, or at least a false sense of expectations on the front end, which later on becomes a mess. And
you know, Andrew, I think I learned that from you, actually. I think one of the big things that you preached when I was working under you was about being careful what expectation you set, because once you set it, then that's what you have to adhere to.
Well, that's right. Your base, especially when you're new, either to an organization or to working with a client or whatever, that is all they know of you at first. And so if they find that you're setting the precedent, and if you set the bar at, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you set the bar at a 9.5, then you better not drop below a 9.5, because then there's no room to, you know what I mean? Then it becomes an issue, or there's a problem or whatever. And, it's not the idea of like slowing your pace or like dumbing it down, but there is an idea of pacing yourself, to manage expectations. I think that's a fair thing to do in this industry.
And I think the two caveats I would add to that is, one, like what you're saying, Andrew, where you have a small window of time, it happened to fit perfectly. Sometimes I will also communicate that, like when I send these sketches, say, okay, like this actually came at a perfect time. I had an hour. This never happens, but I can get this sketch back to you. Hopefully that can at least be understood by the client that, oh, this isn't always going to happen. And then the other point is, even if you are doing it super quickly, I now sometimes wait, so that way I can go back and look at it and make sure I'm not missing something, or I'm still happy with it. Because what I was maybe happy with when I rushed, or not rushed, but did it immediately
outside
2 hours after
process.
I got the email. Yeah, exactly. It might be different a day later. Like sometimes you need to sit on it just so that way you can look at it with fresh eyes.
Sure.
Too. So it's good to be efficient, but it is also good to kind of pace yourself to make sure you don't, I don't want to say get sloppy, but like make sure everything is exactly how you want it before you get it back to the client.
So I'm curious what, channels or what channel you believe has been, the best for you when it comes to getting client work. Like, has it been social media? Has it been your website? Has it been, word of mouth, or people see you on Mondo or something like that? Like ultimately what has been the best return?
Well, I think, so I tried asking that in my kind of early years of the kind of my freelance work of like, oh, hey, like, where did you hear about me?
Right.
And 99% of the answers was just, oh, like some website featured your work. I don't remember right now, but it was the internet. So I guess the channel that I get all my work from is like capital I internet. But any more
and all of its subsidiaries.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I have no idea. I mean, I think the biggest thing I found is work begets more work. Like I think I've kind of consistently been one to promote or support personal projects, because I find not so much channels, but I think projects tend to lead to more work. And I think it's mostly my personal projects that tend to get client work emailing me. So it's those personal projects where admittedly I didn't have any creative director. I was just like, this is something I felt passionately about and I wanted to do for the sake of doing it. That kind of gets imbued into the work and they kind of see that it resonates, and hopefully that is the sort of passion they want behind their project. So yeah, I think it's less about Instagram versus Twitter and more about doing or sharing work that you really like, because I think it'll lead to more of that.
Cool.
I think, so knowing, you know, we've known you now for, holy cow, almost 2 years,
yeah,
right?
A couple years now, yeah.
This is weird.
Sorry.
I know. And so, sorry. And I know when we first talked to you the very first time, there was stuff that you couldn't, that you showed us, but you couldn't talk about publicly, sure. or stuff that you could talk about in private that public wasn't supposed to know about. I think when you remove that caveat from the work that you do, you are able to express it more freely, and therefore you show more of it, and people are able to see, oh, they can connect the work that they already love with the person who did it. So that makes total sense to me. So talk to me then about the importance of your website and the importance of any creative professional's website. How much does that play into what you do? Like how much work kind of filters through that? Do you push people to it? Do you push people to your social media? Like how do you use that tool?
So I think, I teach graphic design. I teach the illustration course in graphic design. And the number one thing for any of my students who are kind of basically coming up to me before they graduate saying like, how do I kind of do what you do? My number one piece of advice is always to kind of have a website. And the reason why I suggest that is because having like just a full website to me, says that you're like committed to doing this, like having Behance or mm-hmm. having kind of free portfolio sites is a great way to kind of start and get your work out there. But I think if you're really taking it seriously, or for at least to answer your question, for me, having a website is like, do you know what? This is what I'm doing. Like this is, I'm putting this name to this domain and I've like paid $70 for a couple years of hosting, like I'm in this. And maybe that's not consciously kind of communicated. But I think on a subconscious level, I think people seeing a website really kind of take that to mean, okay, this is like, they're legit. And it's acted, I will suggest this to the students. And for me, it kind of acts as a hub. Like it's where everything else kind of spokes from, my blog, my shop, everything kind of either goes back to the site, or if you got to the site from my shop, then you can go to the blog from there. Like it just becomes a kind of a map for you to be able to find all the other places.
I was going to say, someone needs to identify that. Like I'm totally on board with the idea of having a hub, but that is something that like you have to identify in the way that you present yourself on social media, that you have to be funneling people one way or another in all your stuff. So if you treat Facebook and Instagram and your website and in your mailing list as all completely separate entities that aren't aware of each other, then you're just really splitting the good that you could do.
Right. And it's funny because my big fear is not that I actually assume this, but I'm assuming someone who's kind of like following me on Twitter and maybe Instagram is probably bored from seeing more or less the same posts on all of this stuff at the same time. But I'm quickly realizing that people don't have time to be checking all the social media feeds every minute of every day. So really you're kind of sharing on various platforms. So that way, hopefully they see it on one of them. And yeah, to Patrick's point, like it's all like all my social media or my presence on social media always has my website link. If I post something on my blog, I will talk about it on Twitter, but then direct it back to that. Like it's all kind of cross connected. With the kind of highest concentration point being the website. So that's kind of what works for me. I think probably most creatives, I think that would be the kind of template to follow. I'm sure there are lots of people who would say that it works for them differently or that they approach it differently. But for me, my website is about kind of showing as much work as I can that I love. And if you like this, here's where you can kind of see more regular kind of day-to-day experiences a la Twitter. Instagram, perfect. My blog. Yeah.
Softball question. How the heck do you make a website?
great. But I'm going to give you a real lengthy answer as I'm wont to do. So I started with like Dreamweaver years ago and coded a really simple site because that's the limit of my skill. But I found that limitation made for a more efficient, kind of well-run site. So I made it on Dreamweaver. For the longest time, that's what I'd been doing. but found it's taking too long for me to update and code. So I was looking to, and actually I think this kind of got sparked by a discussion on the Slack line. Like Squarespace was something I was considering for a while, or kind of templated sites, which I think are great if you like don't have time and want something efficient for, like, I need good work shown quickly and efficiently and someone else to have considered what is that user experience. Then I think Squarespace or template sites like that are a good way to go. But for me, I use WordPress now. So I like have an existing template that I've tweaked and tinkered with to be exactly kind of what I want. But it's far more responsive than anything I could manually code. So yeah, I don't know if I can answer the question of how you make a website. But how I made a website was
Patrick
Dreamweaver
knows how to make
really
a website. He was just being tongue in cheek.
Oh, well,
that's what he does for a living.
Patrick, how do you make a website?
I forgot. No, but well, I've seen lots of,
you gotta do it Monday.
Lots of brackets, lots of lots
no, but
of
this is from
numbers.
The Slack channel. This is, I want to get the name right. It's PG...
McCall?
Is it? Yeah, PG McCall 27. Right. It's a person in the Slack channel. And that's what they're trying to figure out is how do I best present my stuff? And, you know, if I don't have time, like you said, when you said you were working with Dreamweaver, so I guess you were actually, like, on some level writing code.
Full on, yeah.
You know, I don't have the time to do that. I'm too busy making my artwork. So how do I put something out there that feels very unique and tailor-made and is really pushing my message in the best way for my message, but at the same time is not a time sink, is not something that I'm going to be losing a bunch of time doing. It's not something that I have to, like, spend a year or 2 years developing a new skill.
Right.
how do you strike that balance? So,
and I think everyone's going to have a different answer, but I really think kind of Squarespace or those template sites are great for, I think what's great about Squarespace, or I really need another example because I can only think of that, but template sites being great for, I don't really have much time and the work is going to tell the whole story. Cause I mean, really there are tons of sites out there that are running on the same platform that look completely different simply because the work on it is different. Like, I think I sometimes got hung up too much on my site looks too much like this person's grid template. But at the end of the day, it's because it works and their work is different than mine. So yeah.
Let me just ring a big bell there, because I think that's the answer. Is it ultimately the website needs to get out of the way? Like, it needs to present your work to as many different platforms, like devices, as possible in a readable way. So it needs to actually work on a phone and work on a desktop and work on a tablet. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the person's there to look at your work, not to look at the grid your work is sitting in. So.
Yeah. And that's where, I mean, when we're talking about websites with my students, my biggest thing is how long is it taking me to get to the actual work? Cause a lot will design this really great kind of experience of go to this page and then you have to click here and then one more click and then I get to see your work. No one wants that. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm on your site and I need to see the actual work. Like, that's number one. And then you can tell the story through the artwork itself or the write up behind it. But it always kills me when it takes 4 or 5 clicks to get to your artwork. And when you don't have your name anywhere on your actual site or on your social media, which has also kind of been my big kind of question of like, why are you doing this if you won't tell me who you are? Or if you won't show me your work. So
that begs a follow up for me, because you go by the handle Kolb is neat everywhere. Mm-hmm. So how easy is it for people to deduce that your name is actually Andrew Kolb? And if they search Andrew Kolb, they'll find like your work.
Well, I mean, so like everywhere on social media, I'm Kolb is neat, but I think my name is still pretty clearly Andrew Kolb. On my website, it says across the top, like Kolb is neat, the neat work of Andrew Kolb. Like it's pretty clear, hopefully, like it doesn't take a lot of work for someone to figure it out, because they're assuming that it's not my actual name or my name isn't Kolbus, which I sometimes get, but it's
Kolbus.
Pretty infrequent. Yeah,
people think your name is Kolbus.
Well,
that's a pretty awesome name.
It is, but
there's actually a drummer named Kolbus, but keep going. Sorry.
Oh, great. No, so that's it. But I think I don't think I get that often because my actual name is pretty clearly telegraphed across my site or social media stuff. Every once in a while, I'll get an email address to Andrew Kolbus, but not that often. Yeah, but like I will go on tons of Twitter accounts where they don't have their actual name, or I'll click on that and then go to their website, and I still actually didn't, I don't know like where this person is from, or like if they, I mean, like nothing. I don't even know who to address this email to outside of their like social media handle. So it's so important.
Dear sir or madam,
somewhere. Yeah, exactly. Like it just feels so impersonal. So get okay, your name so out there.
Let me ask you one question and then lead into our finals. We'll each have one more to kind of round it out. I've had the opportunity to work with you a couple of times on a semi-professional level. Yeah. I say semi.
Just because some you're of those, involved.
Well, yeah, it's because nothing's ever fully professional when I'm there. When we talked earlier about expectations and clarifying all those questions and everything, expectations always in writing?
Yes. Yeah. Or even if you're doing it verbally, then I always do a follow-up kind of in an email just to confirm. Because again, I may have taken notes that are completely wrong from what like you got out of the conversation. So I really feel like seeing those words confirms that everyone's on the same page, assuming everyone is using English as their first language.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've seen you send back these follow-up documents, and they're always fairly thorough. Based on like, here's what I heard, da 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 da. Here's what I'm going to execute based on what I heard, da 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 da. Here's the timeline in which we need to blah 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 blah. Here's when money's due. Like it's like usually at least a 2-page document. It's like it's nice. It's as a on the client side, it's nice. I know what I'm getting, and I think that's really important. All right, Patrick, Luke, why don't you take your final question?
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier about what you put on your website, and you hinted at it a little bit. And I know that's a conversation that we could probably have another whole podcast on, but just, semi-quickly, your thoughts on, do you stack that with your personal work, the work that you, the reason you do what you do, or you do that, like, do you put client work in there, or is it kind of a mixture? How do you see that online portfolio?
I think it's a mix. I will definitely put work on my site based on clients if I'm happy with the work. Like at the end of the day, I think my number one kind of question that needs to be answered, or the box that needs to be checked before I put it on my site, is would I want to do this again? Because inevitably, if someone sees something on my site, they will ask about it.
Yeah.
If I draw a cat, then I will get 2 more requests about cats. And then if I post those, then it just becomes cats forever. Which can be fine.
I mean, you do have an Instagram devoted to a cat.
I do.
I mean, and you actually, don't want to point out the irony here, but...
This is a subliminal request that I want more cat commissions.
Isn't it cat is neat?
Yeah, it is cat
is
neat.
Yeah, it sure is.
It is cat is neat, yes. And it's active, too.
Oh, yeah. I post, I think, maybe just as much to that as my own account. I digress. This has been a long ruse to get more cat-based work.
You hear, show the work you want to do, right? That's what we hear a lot. So that's basically what you're saying.
And I think that's why personal work is important, because admittedly, if you're getting client work that is in one vein, but you want to do something else, it's going to have to be you who... starts that, because I think if you're always doing greeting cards, someone's not going to randomly come to you with a board game project.
Sure.
You have to do the board game yourself as a personal project, and then maybe do another one.
Wait a second, are you going to do a board game?
No, I don't know.
He already did Clue.
Yeah, but that's a perfect example. So like, I like working with like small design sets, like cards. I like those sorts of projects. So I redid Clue, like it's recognizable, but I also enjoy it. So as much as it's a calling card, it's also just something that I was happy to do. And that's it.
Oh, so. I like the idea of calling cards when you're talking about cards. I'm still waiting for my, once every like month or 2 months, I tell Kolb, as soon as you make a Clue poster, I'm buying it. Oh, I'm your first customer. Just make a Clue poster. Doesn't matter what it looks like.
Just commission him to do it and pay him for it.
No, that's too easy. I'm broke.
That's way too easy.
I'm 50% sale. I'm going to wait until he makes it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Until next December.
November 2017.
Oh, gosh.
So my thing is, let's just imagine for a second that you're a poor artist that you aren't, super rich, Andrew Kolb.
Yeah.
When do you say no to a client? Like, how do you find the balance between I need to get a paycheck versus I have to do, what's true to my heart, or I have to be doing the work that I want to continue building on, because like you just said, you don't want to be doing something that is perpetuating something you're trying to not be a part of. So right. How do you find the balance between I need to get a paycheck and I want to do my work?
I think it needs to be, so I think, and I'm obviously speaking from a lot of privilege, of just kind of like stability and just kind of recognition. I still generally tend to look at work as like, and even now I'll still take projects that maybe aren't necessarily going to go on my website, but pay fairly well. But it has to be one of the two. Like, I think if I'm taking a job that isn't going to pay well and it's not going to fill me creatively, then I might as well do something else. Like, I might as well work at a coffee shop part-time to pay the bills and then just work late hours doing what I love. So as far as how I determine or if someone is taking a project or not, that one's hard. I think the big thing is what need is it filling? And if it's not filling any, then I don't think you should take it. Like, I think doing spec work or taking on a project for exposure serves no purpose. Like, I think the internet is great at exposing you on its own, that you shouldn't be doing something for free or for very, very cheap just for the potential of getting more work. I think it's probably better to do a regular non-creative job that you can like easily pay your bills and then work late on the weekends and evenings to kind of get into your passion. Maybe that's my suggestion, is really focusing on, like, maybe early on it's going to be a lot of work. Like, getting into the arts isn't easy. Like, I think it takes a lot of work that maybe you're working 9 to 5 to pay the bills. I think you've definitely talked about this on the podcast. Like, a lot of the listenership is like working in a proper job, but wants to break into freelance. I think the hard part of it, or the hard truth, is that you're going to have to, for a while, do both really aggressively or like faithfully until you can sever that tie. So working evenings and weekends, like, I was lucky that I did it at a stage in my life where I like wasn't in a long-term relationship or had a lot of responsibility. So I could basically work and just draw all the time in my evenings and on my own. But that's kind of what led to it. This isn't answering your question at all, Patrick, but...
Well, no, I mean, it sounds like it's a balance you have to decide. I mean, what I've just heard is that I'm adding a third box. I heard two from you. I'm going to add the third one. But the point is, if it doesn't help anyone, if it doesn't put money in your pocket, and if it doesn't fulfill you creatively, then why are you wasting time on it?
Right. Yeah, I guess the caveat to that whole thing is like nonprofits or for charity work, completely different. But if they're making money, then admittedly you should be too. I think we were also talking about this on the Slack line. Like, it's a pretty simple thing. If they're profiting, then you should get part of that profit because you're helping with that. So
yeah,
whatever that balance is, it's up to you.
So to wrap this whole thing up, we try to be the podcast that tries to be very encouraging, right? So anytime that we're talking with people, we want to only build up your work. When we talk about you on the show, we only want to say how good your stuff is. And we're not going to bring people on the show who we don't genuinely love their stuff. But there is this difference between loving someone's stuff and then that person actually being like genuinely loved and generally loved by populace, you know? So you have found a fair amount of success. So other than just the three of us who like to gush over your work and we like to buy your stuff because we dig your style, you actually have a name that is associated with doing high quality work, and you've worked with all sorts of companies and galleries producing high quality work for high quality clients. So you're not shabby, right? You have been around the block. You know what you're doing. At what point do you feel like you had kind of stepped beyond the idea of the imposter syndrome, feeling like you were inside of a field that you didn't belong and kind of felt like you earned your stripes?
Oh, I hate to break it to you, but I think it's something that never ends. I think there's always going to be an element of imposter syndrome, because I think the people who are dedicated are always going to be looking to either the next level or to someone that inspires them. Their work is always just going to be a little bit better. And I think that's important. Like, I think it's good to reflect and be happy with where you're at. But I don't think I could say I've gotten to a point where I can look back and be like, cool, I've done it. Because I mean, one, I'm not retiring on, mountains of, Scrooge McDuck cash. And two, because I think there's still better work in me. Like, I think as happy as I am with what I've done, I still think I can get better, and I'm still looking at other people's work and just kind of life and finding things that I want to improve upon. So while there are definitely a lot of milestones, like, I'm really happy that I have a book published. I'm really happy that I've gotten into galleries, that I've sent emails or emailed with people that I used to look up to as equals. Like, I think I definitely take time to reflect and appreciate that. But there's always going to be something that I'm not quite at yet, and I'm still happily hiding in wolf's or sheep's clothes amongst the others. So yeah, again, I'm just like a terrible guest tonight, being like, I don't have an answer for any of these.
No, dude, this is great.
Well, I think it kind of sounds a bit like you're saying you live in the discontent portion, which I think is fine. It's this idea of like, you know, it's, you don't want to hate yourself, right? You don't want to just wake up and think like, you know, I'm a hack, I need to turn it in. But at the same time, you also don't want to feel like you've made it, because you want to be challenged by what's going on around you. So there has to be some level of discontent to you always to keep pushing you forward.
Yeah, like, I think simply put, when I finish a project, or anytime I look at an old piece of work, I will look at it and say, okay, what did I like about it? What am I happy with? And also, what do I now know, or what can I continue to improve upon? Because I think you kind of need both if you want to keep going. Like, you need to kind of keep what you do well, but also lose what you don't. And I think that's important. So,
well, I think that's well said, and like anything else, these conversations don't just begin and end in our 40-minute conversations online or on the podcast. These conversations are happening day in and day out on our Slack channel. Andrew is a part of those conversations. There are a ton of other incredibly talented professional artists who are in the Slack channel having those conversations as well. Jump in there and dialogue, because you can get, I mean, you throw one question out there, you end up getting three or four different perspectives on it, and you never know which one's going to help you get to the next level. You never know which one's going to help you kind of step, you know, forward and do the next thing, maybe even better than what you were, you know, what you could have done on your own. So, tell everybody where they can find you, where they can, I know we've talked about websites and social media this entire time, but tell everybody what your website is, tell everybody where your social media is, where they can find you and support you.
Yeah, my website is colbizneat.com, and like we were saying, that's pretty much the hub for everything else. Like, you can find my blog, my shop, links to my main kind of social media. But I am colbizneat pretty much on all kind of social media handles. So yeah, that's where you can find me. And I'm happy to answer any questions on Slack too. I'm usually a silent observer who's just like scrolling through every day being like, yes, this is good. but I generally don't jump in unless I'm like directly mentioned.
Say his name three times and he will show up though.
Yeah, he's like Beetlejuice or Bloody Mary. So just as a final kind of thing, as we leave this episode, and we head into the new year, what would you tell any artist out there who is on the brink of, or on the bridging to, trying to do this thing full time and be in the creative industry full time? What would your advice be for them for 2017?
Ooh, just like keep going. Like, success isn't like a steady incline. It's more of a staircase. So like something happens and all of a sudden you jump up, and then you just kind of plateau for a while, and then something happens out of your control and you like jump up again. So just keep going. Cause if you really feel like you've kind of plateaued, then that means it's just before that next kind of break, but you have to keep going. Otherwise it's not going to happen.
It's the Dory method. Just keep swimming, everybody.
Yeah.
So that's it for this episode. A huge thanks to Andrew for joining us. And man, you're a blast to talk to every time, and especially when you're dropping serious knowledge on us. Thanks for helping us get this year started off on the right foot. If you have any questions at all, just email them directly to Andrew. It doesn't even matter. It can be tax questions. It can be really just anything.
Marriage advice. If you want to know more about Canada, he'll tell you.
Sure. I can't believe we went an entire episode and didn't mention
that's
anything
why I
about
said it. That's the only reason I said it.
Well, we almost did.
He's gonna
we
snap.
Almost did.
I can't believe that we managed to get through that whole... Oh, man, that's crazy. Thanks, Luke, helping us keep the track record going. But check out all of his work. It's fantastic. You can find us on mofonepodcast.com. You might see, if you haven't been on there in a couple weeks, it's gotten a bit of a facelift. There's some new stuff on there. Check it out. You can find show notes, links to all the stuff we talked about. You can also find an archive on there. You can connect to our Slack channel, which we talked about in this episode. mofonepodcast.com/slack. You can support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/mofonepodcast. If you like what you hear and you want to continue to hear more stuff and you want to help us cover costs and things, you can join us on there. There's also some rewards and some gifts and things that come along with that. So hop on there and help a brother out. I guess it would be three brothers out, right? I mean, it wouldn't just be, there's four brothers. what was this, Luke?
I don't know how to count. What's this, three?
Okay. That hurt my chest. You might need to mark that whole thing. And you can find us on social media. Just search M of One Podcast on all the different platforms. Guys, there's every single way that you can connect with us is available. So do it. is that a good pitch?
I don't know.
But anyway, the point is we are out there. We want to connect with you. We want to talk with you. You can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. When you do that, Patrick, what do?
Yeah, you want to leave a rating and a review. So it takes just a couple seconds to do. Well, I mean, 30, 40, 45 seconds. If you're bad with English, it might take a minute and a half. But take time, tell us what you think about the show, leave a rating. We are going to read that on air.
It helps so much. It seriously helps so much.
Positive, negative, whatever. We just want to know how you feel about the show. And so we can just go about what we do.
And then after we read the review, we'll let you know how the show feels about you.
Yeah.
We may not change anything. That's important.
We will review you then in turn.
Based on your review.
Yeah, a quid pro quo situation. No, but seriously, 2016 was an incredible year for the show. We breached 125,000 downloads. That's because of you guys.
Thank you so much.
2017, we want to see that number go even bigger, and that is up to you guys.
126,000.
So, yeah, we want to get an extra thou in there. An old extra K. But seriously, we've got a ton of stuff planned for this year. We can't wait to roll it all out, but go on there and check all that stuff out. But for this episode, we're going to get out of here. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Andrew also.
Peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butts.
Canada. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you're going to hang tough to make it. History repeats itself. Try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dreams. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
So let me round this out. So we talk a bit and we fluff all the time, and it's not because we are
just three fluffy men.
Yeah. So we let me start this over, Luke.
No, you gotta keep the fluffy
fluffing,
in.
Cupping, no, let's keep those.
You can keep the fluffy in for the blooper episode.